Today is Thursday, February 27th, and this is the World Socialist Website. U.S. House adopts budget plan to spearhead social counter-revolution, by Patrick Martin. On Tuesday night, the U.S. House of Representatives took the first step in the Trump administration's plans for devastating cuts in social spending, particularly on health care, adopting an initial budget plan by a 217-215 vote. The measure begins the so-called reconciliation process, in which Congress passes a single annual budget and tax bill that cannot be filibustered in the Senate. With only a 3-vote majority in the House, in a 53-47 majority in the Senate, reconciliation is the preferred mechanism for the Trump White House to enact its core program unilaterally, without negotiating with the Democrats. The final bill is expected to incorporate far more than just budgetary items, providing a vehicle for major changes in policies ranging from immigration to the environment. The House bill did not include such provisions, which will be worked out in future talks with Senate Republicans and the White House. But the budgetary provisions alone demonstrate the colossal social counter-revolution that the second Trump administration is seeking to carry out. The bill provides the initial framework for House committees that will actually draft the provisions of the reconciliation legislation. This includes increased spending of up to $300 billion for the military and immigration and border enforcement, and up to $2 trillion in spending cuts for all other government functions, primarily health care, education, food stamps, transportation, and the environment. The legislation would provide up to $4.5 trillion in tax cuts over 10 years, a figure already rejected by some Senate Republicans because it falls short of the full 10-year cost of extending the tax cuts for the wealthy that was enacted in 2017 during Trump's first term. Many of these tax cuts expire this year, and both corporations and billionaires are clamoring for their bonanza to be made permanent. The House bill is a further demonstration of the utter indifference to legal and constitutional constraints on the part of the Trump White House and the Republican Party as a whole. A reconciliation bill is required to be deficit neutral. The requirement is met by assuming that extension of the tax cuts, combined with the scrapping of business regulations, will unleash massive economic growth that will raise tax revenues by $2.6 trillion. When that fails to materialize, the resulting deficit blowout will prompt demands for even more cuts in social spending. Amid nonstop lying by Trump and his aides, who claim that there will be no benefit cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, the House bill instructs the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which oversees Medicaid, Medicare, and other health programs, to cut at least $880 billion in spending over a 10-year period. An analysis of the underlying budget figures by the New York Times pointed out that all other government programs under the jurisdiction of this committee, beyond Medicaid and Medicare, account for only $200 billion combined. That means that the vast bulk of the cuts must come out of healthcare programs, the largest of which, in terms of people served, is Medicaid, which provides healthcare coverage for the poorest sections of the working class, as well as disability payments and nursing home care for millions of elderly people. All told, the joint state and federal program provides benefits for 72 million people, more than 20% of the U.S. population. Among the measures being considered to implement the cuts are imposing work requirements, allowing more frequent eligibility checks on beneficiaries, likely to disqualify millions of eligible recipients because they fail to meet paperwork requirements, and capping the federal contribution to the program, while leaving the actual benefit cuts to be made by the states, which administer the joint program. The biggest single cut would involve effectively rescinding a major portion of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, by cutting off the subsidies to the 41 states that have expanded Medicaid coverage to 20 million Americans, with incomes slightly above the poverty line. These states would either have to eliminate the Medicaid expansion, cutting off health insurance, or make offsetting cuts in other state programs, such as public education. The Times estimated this would save the federal government as much as $560 billion. Another major social regression would be carried out by the House Agriculture Committee, which has jurisdiction over the food stamp program. This committee is instructed to cut $230 billion over the next 10 years, and there is little likelihood that this will come out of support payments for giant agribusiness interests. House Republican leaders issued a statement celebrating their action as, quote, delivering on President Trump's full America First agenda, not just parts of it, unquote, after which Trump held his first full cabinet meeting Wednesday at the White House. Trump gave the spotlight to billionaire Elon Musk, whom he has designated as his chief budget cutter. He asked the assembled cabinet members to give their assessment of Musk's efforts, and they responded with a predictable ovation. Trump gave his backing to Musk's provocative email messages to the entire federal workforce, demanding that every worker provide a 5-point summary of their job accomplishments from last week or be fired. 1 million workers, nearly half the workforce, have not responded to Musk's messages, and Trump said that all of them should be considered at risk. Also on Tuesday, Trump issued an executive order requiring every federal agency and department to develop plans for mass layoffs, called Reductions in Force, or RIFs, by March 13th. This would extend the jobs bloodbath beyond the probationary and temporary employees who have already been laid off en masse, and include more senior workers who have civil service protection and supposedly cannot be fired arbitrarily. Trump mentioned the order at the cabinet meeting, praising Lee Zeldin, head of the Environmental Protection Agency, for preparing plans to eliminate 65% of the EPA's workforce. The March 13th deadline is significant because on March 14th, the current continuing resolution, which authorizes spending by federal agencies, is set to expire. The continuing resolution was adopted in December after Congress failed to pass a budget for the current fiscal year, which began October 1, 2024. Unless a budget is adopted or a new continuing resolution is passed, a partial shutdown of the federal government would begin March 14th. This could well be the occasion for the layoff of hundreds of thousands of workers, not just as a temporary measure, as during previous shutdowns, but permanently. Even those workers ultimately called back to their jobs would likely lose pay for the period of the furlough, meaning countless evictions, foreclosures, and other hardships. In the face of these impending calamities, the Democratic Party and the trade unions that supposedly represent these workers are engaged in nothing more than impotent hand-wringing. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries, while acknowledging that the budget bill would mean, quote, the largest Medicaid cut in American history, unquote, proposed no action to stop it. His position remains, as it has been since Trump took office with his tiny majorities in the House and Senate. What leverage do we have? It goes without saying that when the positions are reversed, Republican minorities have engaged in full-scale war against Democratic administrations and blocked their proposed actions. But that only demonstrates the difference between the two parties of corporate America, one pretending to defend working people and the other brazenly doing the bidding of the super rich, in this case, with the richest man in the world wielding the chainsaw. The struggle against Trump's massive social cuts, as against his attacks on immigrant workers and democratic rights, and his full program of dictatorship and war, will only come from the working class, which must establish its political independence from the Democratic Party and its subservient trade union vassals, and come forward in an open social and political struggle against the Trump administration. Trump administration demands immigrants, including children, register with DHS in preparation for deportation, by Joseph Kishore and Jacob Cross, in a major attack on the democratic rights of the entire working class. On Tuesday, Trump's Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, Secretary Kristi Noem announced that the agency would begin compiling a list of immigrants to, quote, track and compel them to leave the country voluntarily, unquote. Noem's fascistic statement claimed the agency would be enforcing provisions contained in the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952, or INA, which provides, quote, multiple tools to track illegal aliens and compel them to leave the country voluntarily. Seeking to whip up a pogrom-like atmosphere against any and all suspected immigrants, the DHS announcement warned that under the INA, the U.S. government can prosecute immigrants for failing to self-deport or failing to provide the government with their fingerprints and current home address. The DHS said the registry is mandatory for anyone 14 or older who is not currently in the country legally, and that parents and guardians of children under 14 are also required to register, making clear that the registration will be used to locate and deport, not provide a pathway to citizenship. In an appearance on Fox News Wednesday, Secretary Noem stated bluntly, quote, they will be fingerprinted. They must announce that they are here. And if they do so, they can avoid criminal charges and fines, and we will help them relocate right back to their home country, unquote. There is more than a whiff of fascism in Trump's latest attack. In February 1939, the Nazis created the Reich Association of Jews in Germany, or Reichsvereinigung der Juden in Deutschland, which compelled the forced registration and deportation of German Jews. Those who registered with the Reichsvereinigung, which was controlled by the Gestapo, were first sent to forced labor and then to death camps. Historically, in the United States, the forced registration of immigrants has been used as a battering ram to suppress left-wing and socialist opposition to war and inequality. Under the 1940 Alien Registration Act, also known as the Smith Act, over 5 million immigrants were forced to register with the U.S. government during World War II. Of those 5 million, 900,000 were categorized as enemy aliens and subjected to deportation. 18 members of the Trotskyist Socialist Workers' Party, or SWP, were charged by the Roosevelt administration under the Smith Act for advancing a socialist internationalist perspective during the war. Leading members of the party, except FBI informant Joseph Hansen, spent 6 to 12 months in prison after being convicted in 1941. The same law was used to imprison 120,000 Japanese Americans on the West Coast. Following Noem's announcement Tuesday, CNN reported on Wednesday, citing three sources in the administration, that the Trump administration was preparing to invoke the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. The measure was passed as part of the Alien and Sedition Act, which was also used to provide the pseudo-legal justification for the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II. The law was written so that if the United States was under immediate attack by a foreign combatant, the president could order the detention of enemy combatants captured on U.S. soil in the course of the war. Trump, however, has repeatedly threatened to use the law as a hammer to carry out his militarized deportation operations without any interference, citing a non-existent invasion by immigrants. The Trump administration, without any opposition from the Democratic Party, is rapidly constructing a vast domestic apparatus of repression. What is emerging is a militarized police state, integrating the military, intelligence agencies, and private mercenaries into an extra-legal force aimed at crushing opposition and consolidating power in the hands of a criminal cabal. At the center of this effort is the plan to establish mass detention centers for immigrants, using military bases to imprison and deport millions. Yesterday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, a Trump loyalist and advocate of using the military against domestic opposition, visited Guantanamo Bay, long a symbol of imperialist lawlessness. Guantanamo, which became infamous for torture indefinite detention, and extrajudicial imprisonment during the so-called War on Terror, is now being used to indefinitely detain immigrants, with dozens reportedly being held there without trial. Hegseth's visit signals that Trump intends to use Guantanamo as a model for mass internment camps inside the U.S., where immigrants and ultimately political opponents can and will be held. The Trump administration has already begun expanding military detention facilities across the United States. Reports confirm that Fort Bliss in Texas is being transformed into a mass internment camp capable of holding up to 10,000 detainees. Other sites under consideration include Air Force and Army bases in Utah, Colorado, Florida, and New York. The intention is to use wartime military infrastructure to construct a network of domestic concentration camps, entirely outside the jurisdiction of civilian courts. The Trump administration is also considering enlisting private mercenaries to carry out deportations and political repression. Politico has revealed that Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, infamous for its war crimes in Iraq, has assembled a group of military contractors with the aim of playing an active role in mass roundups. Prince, along with former Blackwater COO Bill Matthews, has circulated a 26-page blueprint proposing a $25 billion operation to deport 12 million people by 2026. The plan calls for the creation of processing camps on military bases, a fleet of 100 aircraft, and a private citizen army empowered to track down, detain, and deport immigrants. According to Politico, the document states that deporting 12 million people, quoting, would require the government to eject nearly 500,000 illegal aliens per month. To keep pace with the Trump deportations, it would require a 600% increase in activity. It is unlikely that the government could swell its internal ranks to keep pace with this demand. In order to process the enormous number of deportations, the government should enlist outside assistance. End quote. This proposal, however, goes far beyond immigration enforcement. The plan recommends, according to Politico, quote, deputizing 10,000 private citizens, including military veterans, former law enforcement officials, and retired ICE and CBP officers, unquote, granting them federal arrest powers. The program includes a bounty system, paying local police officers to round up undocumented immigrants. This resembles the CIA-backed death squads deployed across Latin America in the 1980s, which detained, tortured, and murdered political dissidents under U.S.-backed regimes. Prince's involvement in these efforts is a warning. Blackwater's history of war crimes, including the 2007 Nisour Square massacre, where Blackwater contractors killed 17 Iraqi civilians, shows exactly what these mercenaries are prepared to do. Trump pardoned the Blackwater operatives responsible for the massacre in 2020. The war on immigrants, the destruction of democratic rights, and the militarization of policing are domestic expressions of the same imperialist policies that have produced war and dictatorship abroad. The same state apparatus being built to track down, detain, and deport migrants will be used against striking workers, protesting students, and anyone who resists corporate domination. The only force capable of stopping this assault is the working class. Workers cannot rely on the Democratic Party, which has spent decades building the mechanisms of repression now being wielded by Trump. What is needed is a mass movement of workers against war, dictatorship, and the capitalist system that produces them. RFK Jr. greets first measles death in Texas outbreak with callous indifference, by Bill Shaw. The Texas Department of State Health Services reported the first measles death in the ongoing outbreak in the South Plains and Panhandle regions of the state. The patient, an unvaccinated school-aged child, passed away at a hospital in Lubbock, It marks the first death from measles in the United States in 10 years. Per the department, quote, "Measles is a highly contagious respiratory illness, which can cause life-threatening illness to anyone who is not protected against the virus. During a measles outbreak, about 1 in 5 people who get sick will need hospital care, and 1 in 20 will develop pneumonia. Rarely, measles can lead to swelling of the brain and death. It can also cause pregnancy complications, such as premature birth and babies with low birth weight. Thus far, the outbreak has officially infected 124 people in Texas, of whom 101 are under the age of 18 years. Of these, 18 patients have required hospitalization. Overall, 119 patients were either not vaccinated, including all 18 hospitalized patients and the child who died, or their vaccination status is currently unknown. There are also 9 cases across the border in New Mexico. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., newly confirmed as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, responded to the death by saying callously, quote, "It's not unusual. We have measles outbreaks every year," unquote. In his remarks, he did not express any regret or sadness for the preventable loss of a child, and he furthermore made misstatements and outlandish claims. First, he outrageously stated that the purpose of hospitalizing patients was to quarantine them, saying, quote, "There are about 20 people hospitalized, mainly for quarantine," unquote. This is a flat-out and egregious lie. None of the victims was admitted to the hospital for the purpose of quarantine. Rather, they were hospitalized, without exception, due to respiratory distress. Dr. Laura Johnson, the chief medical officer of Covenant Children's Hospital in Lubbock, noted that all the children hospitalized with measles were admitted because they were having trouble breathing. Second, Kennedy misstated the number of deaths, saying, quote, "There are 2 people who have died," unquote. His tone in making the statement was factual and without emotion. Kennedy instead reserved his passion for his final remarks, in which he dismissed the threat and seriousness of the situation, saying, quote, "Incidentally, there have been 4 measles outbreaks this year. In this country last year, there were 16, so it's not unusual. We have measles outbreaks every year," unquote. Kennedy stopped short of taking credit for measles outbreaks, which would have been entirely appropriate, given his past work as president of the anti-vaccine agency Children's Health Defense, or CHD. Under his watch, CHD promulgated vaccine misinformation and launched several failed lawsuits against vaccines and vaccination campaigns. Just last week, in his first speech to employees at HHS, Kennedy reaffirmed that he intends to undermine the childhood vaccine schedule, which he listed first among formerly taboo possible causes of chronic disease, making clear that he will embark upon an anti-vaccine and anti-public health wrecking operation. He added, quote, "Nothing is going to be off limits," unquote. In 2019, Kennedy also notoriously traveled to Samoa to meet with anti-vaccine advocates, lending credibility to their efforts that resulted in substantial vaccine hesitancy on the island. Not long after his visit, measles ripped through the island's population, infecting more than 5,700 out of approximately 200,000. There were 83 deaths, the majority of whom were young children. Kennedy's expression of indifference to the measles death in Texas comes as multiple infectious disease threats grow across the country. Seasonal influenza continues to surge, with 44 states reporting high or very high transmission levels per the latest data from the CDC. 2 patients are currently hospitalized with H5N1 bird flu in the U.S., 1 each in Wyoming and Ohio. At the same time, the U.S. remains mired in its 10th wave of mass COVID infection, with approximately 600,000 people catching the virus each day. While these diseases spread unchecked, the fascist billionaire Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, continues to lay off or fire many government employees who have been attempting to control the spread of bird flu. The U.S. Department of Agriculture said it, quote, "accidentally fired several," unquote, employees working to control H5N1. DOGE actions also led to the dismissal of employees at the CDC's Laboratory Leadership Service, informally known as the Disease Detectors. Also cut were the CDC's Public Health Associate Program, which supplies personnel with critical expertise to short-staffed state health departments, and its Presidential Management Fellows, which trains future public health leaders. All told to date, DOGE has eliminated approximately 5,200 positions at HHS agencies, including roughly 10% of the workforce at both the CDC and National Institutes of Health, or NIH. Trump's nominee to head NIH, Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, could have a hearing in the Senate as early as next week. Dr. Marty Makary, nominated to head the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, could have a hearing in early March. The remainder of the public health nominees at present do not appear to have imminent hearings, including Dr. Dave Weldon, nominated for CDC director. Bhattacharya is infamous for co-authoring the Great Barrington Declaration, which promulgated the anti-scientific herd immunity policy. Despite objecting at the time, Democrats under former President Joe Biden's administration subsequently implemented that policy in full. Kennedy's quack anti-science dealings extend to removing fluoride from public drinking water systems. That has led to the state of Utah becoming the first in the nation to pass legislation to remove fluoride from its drinking water. The bill now awaits Governor Spencer Cox's signature. In Florida, Republican Senator Keith Trunau has filed Senate Bill SB 700, which would prohibit local governments from adding fluoride to drinking water. The broad assault on public health, with Kennedy as its leading voice and champion, is a major component of the Trump administration's brutal attack on the working class and its plans for clawing back all the gains won by workers in the 20th century. Kennedy's callous response to the death of a school-aged, unvaccinated child from measles, a death that was entirely preventable and for which Kennedy bears much responsibility, is the personification of this coming onslaught. The ruling class intends to commit monstrous social crimes by fostering the spread of deadly infectious diseases throughout the population. The working class cannot fight back through the Democratic Party or its ancillaries like the Democratic Socialists of America, as these entities have already proven complicit in these plans. Instead, it must organize independently on the basis of its own political program, fighting to overturn the capitalist system that depends on such barbarism for its survival. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.